I want you to imagine for a moment that you have brought a friend to church for the first time. And at some point during the service, as we will do in a few minutes' time, you sing Thomas Chisholm's words, "Blessings all mine and 10,000 beside." And the friend who's sitting beside you after the hymn is over turns around and says to you, "You talked about blessings in that hymn. What blessings were you singing about? What blessings do you have as a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ?" Now that ought to be a question, the answer to which could take us a very long time to get through properly. It'd be very difficult, I trust, to condense it into a few sentences. What are the blessings that you have as a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ? You would start, no doubt, from a biblical perspective. You might go to John chapter 10 and verse 10, where the Lord Jesus himself speaks. And he says there, "The thief comes to steal and kill and destroy. But I have come that they may have life and have it more abundantly." More abundantly. Literally life till it overflows. Your friend might say to you, "Well, now that's quite a bold claim to make, that to be a Christian means having life till it overflows." They might say to you that in a 21st century world, we have options for leisure that are almost limited. They're more accessible than ever. On the other extreme, they may point out to the fear and the insecurity and the uncertainty that's in our world in increasing measure. And maybe they'll look to their own lives, or maybe even knowing a little bit about you, they may look to you and say that in your own life you have pain and you've loss and maybe temptation or difficulty to deal with. And yet you say, as a believer, you have life till it overflows. How are you to grasp what Jesus meant? How could you explain it to a friend? Well, Psalm 36 that we read a few moments ago helps us to do just that. There are three blessings that are set out in the psalm that offer one perspective at least on what it means to have life till it overflows. Now, we're going to focus for a few moments just on verses 7 to 9 with those three blessings in mind, but it's important to put the rest of the psalm in its context. Verses 1 to 4 are a bleak and an unsettling picture of what it means to reject God, a picture of all who are outside of Christ. But then you'll see verses 5 and 6, there is a change of emphasis and a change in tone. From he, that's talking about the wicked, to you, looking up to God. David's view, if you like, is changed. It's not looking at around him anymore, but he's looking up. And of course, when you look up, you see things in a very different way. I remember years and years ago, my mum and I deciding, even though we had been Belfast people all our lives, to do a city bus tour, one of the open top tours of Belfast. And I remember the guide saying on that particular occasion, "Look, we know there are lots of you here who have lived in Belfast all your life. You've walked the streets. You know the pavements. You've looked around you so much. Now," he said, "today what I want you to do is to look up. Look up at the skyline. Look up at the tops of the buildings. Look up at the hills around the city. And you will see things in a different perspective." And he was right about Belfast and about the perspective that we had. And here is David lifting his gaze from what is around him and all of the stuff that is depressing and difficult, and he's looking up, and he's looking at God, and he's fixing his eyes on God and who he is. And you see in these verses a picture of God painted here of mercy, a God of faithfulness, of righteousness, of justice, that are described for us in verses 5 and 6 in superlative terms. And when you come to the start of verse 7, David comes to the only conclusion that you can possibly come to. "How precious is your loving kindness, O Lord." And then comes the second part of verse 7. Therefore, the blessings that follow in the rest of 7, 8, and 9 are blessings that come because of God's precious loving kindness. They're not earned. They're not demanded. God is not obligated to provide them for us in any way. All that follows is grace. Three blessings in the verses that follow because of his loving kindness. First one is in the second part of verse 7. Therefore, the children of men put their trust under the shadow of your wings. Children of men put their trust under the shadow of your wings. Put their trust, literally in the original text, it means to flee with haste or to flee with intensity. This is somebody who is in mortal danger and they're running towards safety and they won't stop until they have reached the place of refuge.